right, so let's begin this morning, as we always do. Presence again, here and now, shifting our energy from the transition between focuses here, taking a moment to reset your seat, reset your posture, feel yourself grounding into the earth through your sit bones. Forehead clear, your jaw relaxed. Maybe open your mouth as wide as you can and stick your tongue out as far as possible. I know, it looks great, right? You're supposed to have your eyes closed. Because when your eyes close, nobody can see you. So, but it really does help to release your jaw. Gina taught me that one. Let's all take a deep breath together in through the nose and out through the mouth. Let's open our space with the sound of three ohms, beginning with a deep inhale.
Actually, we had a really beautiful fundraiser over the weekend,
and I got to be a part of the crew on that one, and raising it's for a group that raises awareness around permaculture action and bringing food forests into green spaces, bringing awareness into schools to kids, you know, and how to be more aligned with the environment and how to feed one another. You know, so we've got all this space, so why not use it, right? And then Monday, I taught a special class at Eight Limbs on koshas, on the first kosha, on Anamaya kosha, and we did a really nice tantric food meditation, experiencing our food through all of our senses, and it was just really juicy. Yeah.
What kind of food did you
eat? I offered orange tangerine slices and apple slices, and then I also had some carrots and celery for people who were, for whatever reason, not able to eat fruit. And it was just really juicy and yummy and you know, mindful and very intentional and connecting with food in a way that we might not normally do. I just happened to notice one day I was eating and not even looking at my food. And it was really interesting because I was like, wait a minute, this is just all going into my body and I don't even know what I'm eating, I'm just inhaling it. So I slowed down and I created this meditation moving up through the chakras and through the senses, connected each chakra. And then I found out that it's been done before, of course. But I thought I came up with it, so, you know. But, you know, everything we can think of has been thought of before at some point. So just, we're all on, at some level in one stream of consciousness. You know, we're all connected somewhere. in one stream of consciousness. So I guess I drew that out of the collective somewhere. And then yesterday, Scott and I were blessed and graced to be able to go down to this amazing facility. I never thought I'd think of a prison as an amazing place, but we went down to Stafford Creek Correctional Facility and performed kirtan there, or prayer-formed kirtan there, for the first group of yoga teachers graduating behind bars in the United States. Yeah. And their stories were just so touching and heartfelt. Some of them will be getting out, but there's at least one who's a lifer. He'll never see the outside world again. And he's in there and he's going to begin to bring yoga. I guess the overall superintendent of prisons is now condoned or put his stamp of approval on bringing yoga into all the prisons in Washington State.
Nice.
So, yeah. So, yes.
I got a friend that works for us at Yoga Behind Bars.
Yeah, Yoga Behind Bars is who I went in with, yeah.
There's no federal prisons here, though.
You know, I don't think so. I think it's all state prisons, yeah. I don't know if there's a federal. Is there a federal?
Not in Washington.
In Washington, I didn't think so.
The closest thing is CTAC, and that's a temporary.
Yeah, that's a temporary holding facility. Yeah, so, I mean, good work is being done all around, and this place was amazing. It wasn't at all what I would think of, you know, I thought we'd be in some little sub-basement, you know, locked away through all kinds of different, you know, sliding doors. There were maybe two sliding doors, and, you know, the clanging kind of thing. And it was a bright, airy, sun-filled room with paintings and, you know, just pretty cheery for a prison. I was really surprised. And the guys were able to come up and tell their stories, and there was this really neat interaction going on between the inmates and the staff. And the staff really seemed to care. One thing that the warden said to me that really sat with me, it really struck me. She said, you know, I tell these guys all the time that they're human beings. They're not the mistakes they've made. And I was like, wow, everybody has the opportunity to change. And given the right conditions and the nurturing and the chance, it's possible. It's a choice, always, but it's possible. So, and that's, you know, that's kind of something that comes up with this mantra that we're working with. We're talking about Shiva and in his dance of bliss. And the whole thing, the whole stotram was written by Ravana, right? And we know Ravana as this evil rakshasa, this evil demonic kind of being. And rakshasas are usually human beings or human earthly beings who have gained such great power that, you know, they let their love of power overcome the power of love. And however, it does go to show that even the shadow serves the light in some way. So Ravana wrote this stotram in service of Shiva. He was devoted to Shiva. And as we move through this whole stotram, we're going to be meeting many characters in the stories. So let's just say the words and get them in our mouths. So Jata,
Tavi,
Galajjala, yeah, Pravaha,
Pavita,
Stalani,
Gale,
Valambya,
Lambitam,
Bhujanga,
Tunga,
Malikam. And the capital D, I didn't have the D with the dot underneath it to put on here, but the capital D is the one behind your, like at the top of your mouth with the tip of your tongue.
Damad.
Yeah. Ninadava.
Ninadava.
Damar.
Damar.
Vayam.
Vayam.
Chakara.
Chakara.
Chanda.
Chanda.
Tandavam.
Tandavam.
Tanotu.
Tanotu.
Na.
Na.
Shiva.
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 Good. Jata.
Jata.
Kataha.
Kataha.
Sambrahma.
Sambrahma.
Brahman.
Brahman.
Nilimpa.
Nilimpa.
Nirjari.
Nirjari.
Vilola.
Vilola.
Vici.
Vici.
Vallari.
Vallari.
Viraja.
Viraja.
Mana.
Mana.
Mordani.
Mordani.
Tagad.
Tagad.
So a little bit of an aspirate there after the D. Tagad.
Tagad.
Tagaj.
Tagaj.
Jvala.
Jvala.
Lalata.
Lalata.
Patta.
Patta.
Yeah. Pavake.
Pavake.
Kishora.
Kishora.
Chandra.
Chandra.
Shekare.
Shekare.
Rati.
Rati.
Pratik.
Pratik.
Shranam.
Shranam.
Mama.
Mama.
Beautiful. You guys are really...
Mama.
Got the
great
bob.
Teacher.
Yeah, you got the bob. You have many good teachers. You guys are really, you're doing a lot of Sanskrit with your Siddhi yoga as well. So, and it's really showing with your articulation. It's really beautiful. There's actually one of the yoga teachers that I met yesterday was doing correspondence Siddhi yoga through the Siddhi Yoga Foundation. Found that. That's how he came to yoga. So, yeah. Basically, what we're singing to here in these first two lines is kind of the story of the Ganga.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Jata is the dreadlocks. Tavi is the forest. Galajala is the oozing water. Pravaha is flowing and streaming. Pavita is cleansed and purified, and stale is the ground, the spot, this spot right here. Gale, valambya, is supporting the neck, lambitam hanging down, bhujanga serpents, tunga malikam, a high and lofty garland. So on this spot, right, with his neck, with his neck consecrated by the flow of water flowing down from the forest of dreadlocks, and supporting that neck, this garland of serpents hanging down. Damad, 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 damad. This is the sound of the damaru, that the damaru makes, his drum, his double-headed drum. Ninadava is the sound, damar, the drum. Vayam is... With the sound of this drum, damad, 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 weaving through the air. Chakara, chanda, chakara performing chanda, the passionate. Tandavam, dance of bliss. Tanotuna, please, Shiva, extend to us, Shiva, Shivam, this auspiciousness. So, performing this beautiful tandava, that is so auspicious, this dance of bliss. Shiva, can you also extend this bliss to us, this auspiciousness to us? And so we're talking about, like, of course, the representation of the kundalini that the snake represents, wrapped around the neck of Shiva. So this is how he expresses himself in the world, through kundalini shakti. And the neck, if you remember, is your Vishuddha chakra, your place of expression, right? Your authentic, true self. So Shiva expresses himself authentically, truly, in the world through kundalini, through shakti, through movement, through this dance, right? And the kundalini is represented by this snake that he wears like a garland, and he wears like a mala. And I'll tell the story of the Ganga here in a moment too. But let me just, we'll just go ahead and go through the next one, and word by word, and then I'll give you kind of a full on translation that I found for these two wines. But Jata, again.
Jata.
Yeah, is the, this is his dreadlocks, right? So it's Jata. Kataha is a well. Sambrahma. So we've heard of Brahma, right? With the B-R-A-H. This is not that. Brahma is a lord, is God, basically. Brahma is, it's a whirling. And it's also a water course. So, and sum is like, right? Like a whirling water course. Brahma, Brahman, a whirling water course. Nilimpa is a god. Nirjari is a river, right? So this holy river, right? Vilolavi, I need to put my glasses back on, I can't see what I've written. Okay, so Vilola is rolling, Vichi is a wave, rolling waves, Valari. Now Valari, the only translations that I could find was like a creeping vine or a plant that climbs. So maybe it's talking about like the water creeping through his hair, like, you know, like vines, maybe. I don't know. I can really get the gist of that word being there, but that's the only translation I could find for that particular word. And then Viraja is shining. Mana is honor, glorify. Mordani, his head. So the rolling wave-like whirling water course in his hair, right? That is this holy river, right? And shines in honor from his head. Dagad, dagad, dagaj. I couldn't find anything. Nothing. No translation for that word, dagad. So I'm thinking it's maybe the churning sound of the water, because in the first one, damad is the sound of the drum. So maybe dagat, dagat, dagat is the sound of the water pumping through his hair.
Okay.
That's all I could get. That's my closest guess. And I'm learning, when I'm doing this stuff, when I'm bringing these things into you guys, just I do want to just give what's the word? When you go into a place and they say, be warned.
Disclaimer?
A disclaimer, thank you, that's what I was looking for. Yes, a disclaimer that I'm learning these things pretty much just the same as you guys are at the same time, maybe just a day or two ahead sometimes. So some of the things I might know from before, but some of these things I'm finding out just before I bring it in. So it's all a learning process in all of our parts. So as far as this word, it's a guess. Okay. And then Jvalal is flaming or blazing. Lalata is a forehead. Pakta is a diadem, kind of like a crown, right? Pavake is bright. So we're just talking about his forehead blazing and bright. Kishora is to be youthful. And we're talking about Chandra here, so a youthful moon, or what's a youthful moon? When the moon is young, it's a newer crescent moon. So he's wearing this crescent moon on his forehead. Yeah. Shekare is a crown, right? So crowned with this youthful or crescent moon. Rati pratikshanam mama. Rati, we met Rati last week or the week before. I think it was the week before last we met Rati. She is the goddess of delight, and she's the wife of Kama, right?
Mm.
Yeah, right? So Rati is to be delighted in. Right? Pratikshanam is in every moment, continually, always. Mama, me, my delight. I'm in every moment, I'm continually delighted by this beautiful image of Shiva and anyway, let me go ahead and read you the full translation. So the first line, with his neck consecrated by the flow of water, flowing from the thick forest-like locks of hair, and on his neck where the lofty snake is hanging like a garland, the Dhamaru drum making the sound, weaving the sound, damat, damat, damat. Lord Shiva did the auspicious dance of the Tandava, and may he shower prosperity on us all. I am so delighted in Lord Shiva, continually delighted in Lord Shiva, whose head is glorified by rows of moving waves of the celestial river Ganga, the holy river Ganga, agitating in the deep well of his hair locks, who has the brilliant fire flaming on the surface of his forehead, and who has the crescent moon as a jewel on his head. Yeah. So let's sing for a little bit, and then I'm going to tell you the story of the Ganga.
All right.
Okay?
All right.
Sitting up nice and tall. I will have this entire thing memorized by the time we're all done with it. Alright, let's again reset our posture. Take a deep inhale. Let it go. Let's just do one more om together. Gala chala Can you still feel the movement of that meter, that rhythm? It's like kind of like a river just flowing down. And I love that the first two lines really set the tone for that visual, that feeling of flow. Because the river Ganga it represents the flow of life. Basically, it represents everything that just nourishes our being, the energy and the waters and the emotions that make up our reality, that we create our reality with. River Ganga, she's all of that. And there's a lot of stories around the Ganga River and how she came to be. And a few different, like a lot of different variations on this story, but I kind of found the one that I like. And I'll bring them in to you today. So there was a king, a great Asura king, actually, but he was very benevolent. And he was getting a lot of power. So the Suras are the kind of the angels, and the Asuras are more of the demonic forces. But there's more subtleties to it than just that. So they weren't necessarily evil. They were just the opposing forces of darkness and light, which can come into a kind of a balance and not be so extreme. And I guess when we're talking about the subtle realms, this can happen there. I don't know. So, I mean, there's just all these nuances to black and white that's just so much more. I mean, there's a lot of gray area there, right? Because they can blend and create gray. And so I guess at some level, this Mahabali character, who is an Asura, found himself being really benevolent and was very, but had a lot of pride around his benevolence. So that's where the gray area comes in, right? He was very proud of the fact that he was able to grant any wish to anyone who asked anything of him. Right? And this was a great area of arrogance for him. So, of course, you know, the greater gods always get a kick out of it when somebody gets overly prideful about anything, right? And as we learned with the sages in the forest last week, with Vishnu and Shiva, it's usually Vishnu and Shiva who get the big kick out of things and go in and throw a little monkey wrench in the work. So, this time it's Vishnu. He's noticing this Mahabali. And also Indra. Indra he's like the king of heaven. And he's noticing that Mahabali is really getting a lot of power, you know, through his great benevolence, right? And so he's gaining a lot of ground in all three worlds, in the Svarga, in the heavens, on the earth, and in the Patala regions of the netherworlds, right? So Indra goes to Vishnu, and he's, like, really worried. He's like, this guy's getting pretty powerful here, and I'm getting a little worried. You know, he's going to start taking things over. And so Vishnu's like, okay, I'll take care of it. So Vishnu's fifth incarnation into the realm of density was a little dwarf guy. His first actually human form. And he was, what else was he? A lion, and then the boar, we talked about the boar, Varaha. Yeah, he was that. So this time, and then there was something else, I'm not sure what it was, but this time he incarnates into the form of a dwarf, a little tiny guy, a little wooden umbrella, right? He goes hobbling into Mahabali's kingdom. And he's like, hey, I hear that you give anything that anybody wants to them if they ask you. And Mahabali's like, yeah, sure, what do you want? You know? And Vamana is the little dwarf Vamana. He's like, well, I just want 3 strides of land. That's all I want. Just whatever 3 steps I can take, whatever land that crosses, that's what I want. And Mahabali looks at him, he's like, you got some pretty short legs there, dude. It's not asking a lot, but sure. And so Vishnu, because he's that powerful, can do that. All of a sudden expands to an enormous size, so large that you could not see the top of his head through the clouds. I mean, just no way. I mean, larger than the universe. So with 1 stride, he strides over the entire earth. And the entire earth is now his. And with his next stride, he hits the edge of the universe. And his toe cuts a slit in the edge of the universe. And the river Ganga comes pouring through. Mm. And pours over his foot, which is, of course, coated with saffron.
Of course.
So, yeah, of course, right. And so the river Ganga takes on this beautiful pink hue, and she flows into the universe as the celestial river Ganga. Right? Which I think is also connotated to the Milky Way, to that river that we see up there. Maybe.
The Aurora Borealis.
Yeah, or the Aurora Borealis could be, it's a beautiful pink glow. And then he starts to step over the realm of Patala, and Mahabali's like, no, please don't take everything from me. I'll cut off my own head. They seem to like to cut off their heads, so I'll cut off my own head. We had the cutting off the head story before, with Ravana. So now Mahabali is offering to cut off his head, and Brahma takes pity on him, and he's like, okay, you can have the realm of Patala. You can rule the underworld. So forevermore, Mahabali is now the ruler of the lower realms. And so here's this beautiful river Ganga now released into the universe, and she's just flowing and being herself, being the beautiful river that she is. And she's so beautiful that all the celestial nymphs and all of the devis and devatas, all the gods, the lesser gods, they're always complimenting her on how beautiful she is. And she gets a little vain. And they're always offering things to her. So she gets a little, she gets kind of a sense
entitlement.
Entitlement. Thank you. That's the word I'm looking for. I'm so glad you guys are here. My words are just not coming to me. I don't have my words today.
You just don't have that.
I'm still a little tired.
Says,
Maybe because I'm just a little too close to it. So yeah. So she has a sense of entitlement, and she's kind of got that attitude, right? Well, meanwhile.
Why not? I mean, what the fuck? Why not? If
right.
She's
gorgeous. I mean, she's
course,
just sparkling, huh? Beautiful, and she's giving life to everything, and yeah, so why not? So meanwhile, back on Earth. Meanwhile, back on Earth. There is this great King Sagara. Great King Sagara. And he has these 2 wives, and he, of course, the old story, nobody can get pregnant, can't have kids, so we're going to do some penance to Shiva, right? So through these great penances to Shiva, he is granted 60,000 sons by his first wife. I know, right? Just like that, right? And his second wife has 1. And these are the most heinous, ill-behaved, absolutely just bad boys.
The horde.
The whole horde, yeah. They're all just really bad boys, right? So, and especially the one son, he's like the worst.
Mm.
The 60,000 are bad on their own, but the one is worse than all of them combined. So Sagara decides that he's going to do the great Ashvamedha Yajna, So that's the one that years, and Sakurai is actually an ancestor and one of the founders of the Surya lineage, the Surya dynasty, the House of the Sun, of which who later on is a prince of. Who is the prince of the House of the Sun? Rama. He's an ancestor of Rama. A great, 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 great grandfather of Rama. So he decides he's going to do this great Ashvamedha Yajna, this great sacrifice of the most beautiful, purest white horse that first must run across the entire continent, right? Just to prove that he is the ruler of this continent, of India. And again, Indra, you know, sees all this, and he's like, oh, God, if he's able to complete this Yajna again, he's going to really gain a lot of powers. And look at all these sons he has who are going to inherit all this power. And this can't be. We can't do this. So on the horse's way across the continent, Indra steals it.
This one?
Indra steals the horse.
Steals the horse.
Yeah. And he takes him to the hermitage of the sage Kapila. And Kapila's asleep. He's in, or not asleep, but he's in meditation, deep meditation, right? He doesn't even know Indra's there with his horse. And Indra ties the horse up next to Kapila. Probably also there's some mischief going on there too, because, you know, he's not too fond of Kapila. So ties the horse up next to Kapila and leaves. And when Sagara and his sons discover the horse has been stolen, they are frantic. And the sons are PO'd. I mean, they're really mad. So they go out and they start to build big, huge pits to try to capture the horse and the thief, right? And each pit, each one builds one or digs one pit that is a whole yojana wide, 81 miles wide. And all of these creatures and people start to fall in these pits, and there's great destruction, and it's really horrible, and they're just creating havoc all over the world, right? And then over centuries, the pits start to fill up with water, and it's said that that's the origin of our oceans, and that's why an ocean is called a sagara in Sanskrit. So that's the origin of the oceans. And now you know. And so finally, the one sun, of the 60,000 suns, they finally converge on the hermitage of the sage Kapila. And there he is in meditation, and there's the horse right beside him. And they're like screaming, thief, you thief, you thief. And Kapila doesn't even know what's going on. And he opens his eyes, and he sees all these people screaming at him that he's a thief. And he's just come out of meditation, and he's being disturbed. And he's so powerful that with one look, he burns all 60,000 sons to ashes. All of them.
So this is the founder of the Salukya lineage, Kapila? Yeah.
Right? Right? Yes, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
I hadn't thought of that. So so here's all these 60,000 souls that are burned to ashes, and yet they don't have the proper consecration. So they don't have the proper funeral rites. Their ashes can't be consecrated in any holy water. So Kapila, no, who is it? Vashistha, the sage, tells the one brother that's left, the only way that you can redeem the souls of your brothers is that they be washed clean in the river Ganga, in the celestial river Ganga. So this one brother doesn't have the tapas, he doesn't have the discipline to be able to redeem, to call the river Ganga down from the heavens, right? Well, see, she's so petulant anyway. She's not budging, right? And so time goes on, and ages pass. Sagara rules for 30,000 years. He can't trust his kingdom to his son because his son is just way too corrupt. So the grandson that's born is actually complete polar opposite from his father. And he bears a son named Bhagiratha. Bhagiratha. So the great-grandson of Sagara finally is the one who has the discipline to make this right. And by that time, the souls of his ancestors have become so disruptive to the kingdom that everything is just falling apart. Right? And so he leaves the kingdom in the trust of his mother and his ministers. And he goes up into the Himalayas. And in the winter, he stands chest deep in freezing water. And in the summer, he stands between four blazing bonfires and stares straight into the eye of the sun. And he does this for 1,000 years. And finally, Brahma is like, okay, what do you want? You've proven yourself in your deep tapasya. And Bhagiratha says, I only want that the Ganga come down to earth and wash clean the sins of my ancestors. That's all I want. I want their souls to be redeemed. So Brahma says, okay, let it be so. He goes to the Ganga and says, Ganga, you've got to come down to earth. And she's like, yeah, right. I'm happy here. Why would I want to go to that dirty place? You know, it's way too dense down there for me. And plus, even if I go down there, I'm so powerful, I'll just destroy it. First few drops, I'll wash everything away. Brahma's like, yeah, I guess you got a point on that. So he goes back to Bhagiratha and he says, Bhagiratha, you know what? You're going to have to do penance to Shiva now. And see if there's some way that Shiva can fix this, can make this happen. So Bhagiratha's like, okay, so back into the water. Back into the fire, right? And after only 1 year, Shiva's like, whoa, 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 whoa. You're doing this out of not just out of self-gratification. You're not doing this for self-gratification. You're doing this for the souls of your ancestors. You're doing this for the earth. You're doing this to make things right, and it's got nothing to do with you. I can see your deeper intention here. So, yeah, I'll do it. So, Brahma talks Ganga into crashing down, and she's really just, she's like, okay, I'll show you. You're going to make me move, I'll show you. Right? So she starts to crash down to the earth, and just as she starts to hit the earth, Shiva steps underneath her. And she's mad. She's upset. Because she was going to have fun with this. And now here's this big head of hair that she's got to find her way through, and it's slowing her down, right? But she does. And it comes to the earth. And Bhagiratha in his chariot starts to lead her on her course toward the ocean, right? And yet still, she's still so upset and so petulant that on the way, they come across this hermitage, this ashrama, belonging to Junu, the sage. And she just floods it and makes a big mess all over the place. And Junu is upset about this, so he, in one gulp, takes the entire Ganga into his mouth. So Bhagavata's like, oh my god, here we go again. So now he does some tapasya and some penance to the sage Junu. And gets Junu to spit her back up, let her go on her way. So she's also called Genevieve, which is the daughter of Junu. So the Ganga is also called the Genevieve because of that. And finally, Bhagiratha leads her to all the places where the souls of his, the ashes of his ancestors lie mingled with the dirt. And they're all washed clean and everybody's released. Their souls are released and penance is done and she finds her way to the sea. And that is how the Ganga came to be on the earth. And that is also why the ashes of those that are deceased are thrown into the Ganga so that their souls can be cleansed.
Washed clean.
Yeah, can be washed clean. And I guess some of the morals to that are, you know, when we truly do our practice, not only for our own benefit, but for the benefit of others, then that too will be, it's recognized. And our practice becomes that much more powerful. And we can move not just mountains, but rivers as well. And on the other side of that, no matter what our past is, the ancestors, right? We, in our practices, can turn that around. We can turn that around no matter where we come from. Okay? We make the choices on how we proceed forward and what our actions, what the consequences of our actions are, is our choice. Right? The actions we take reflect that choice.
Your practice releases gifts.
Right. Practice releases the gifts. Yeah.
It's a sacrifice. It's a tapas.
It is.
The greater the tapas, the greater the...
The greater the tapas, the greater the benefit. Absolutely. So, can we sing it through one more time?
Do
we have time?
No, we...
We need to stop?
Fast.
Okay. We'll take it pretty fast. Okay. Well, we won't do the Om Namah Shivayas, but we'll do the Jatata, we'll do the verses. Okay. Jatata Vigalachala Pravaha Pavitastali
Namaste.
Namaste.